It is almost 3 a.m., and you know what that means. Witches, goblins, and ghouls are about to be at their most powerful, and supernatural activity is about to reach its climax, if you will.
So pull out your harnesses and strap on your broomsticks, because it's time for
the Bitching Hour.
Hey everyone, I'm Mia. Earlier today, I told a friend of mine that I thought a guy we knew was attractive, and I asked, do you know if he's into young lesbians that look like Jimmy Neutron?
Yikes! But also, yay! Is he?
He was like a 40-year-old man that looked like Anderson Cooper, so...
I feel like probably yes, then.
So probably yeah.
Yeah. And hi everyone, I'm Maggie, and I know that Nancy and I are meant to be lovers forever, because we recently learned that both of us, respectively, in the second grade at our own elementary schools, were so excited to be in our Halloween costume parade that we dropped some of our clothes and costumes in the toilet when we changed in the bathroom stall. Like, can you imagine? Like, second grade me. Second grade Nancy, just throwing clothes.
One of you was clothes. A dinosaur costume, right?
Nancy was a clown, and I was Dorothy, and I dropped Toto in the toilet.
Oh, no.
But listening to Nancy talk about it, she's like, I was just so excited to get out of my clothes and put on my clown suit. Like, yes, yes, yes. And then I turned around and I'd thrown all my clothes into the toilet.
It's true love. Like when Shrek kisses Fiona. So welcome, friends, lovers, homosexuals. We're very excited to be welcoming you to our first ever Pride episode.
Woo!
To kick it off, we're digging deep into lesbian stereotypes by sharing our birth charts. After that, we're talking pride, shame, parades, politics, and day drinking. To close out, we're getting nice and tender by sharing our personal pride anthems.
I can't wait.
Me too.
I can't believe we're going to have a gay episode.
On a gay podcast that we have.
Oh my God.
Gay month.
Gay. It's gay holiday. For this first minigame today, we wanted to do the gayest thing possible because this is the gayest episode of the gayest podcast. So we're talking about our birth charts.
Yay!
Yay!
I feel like we're magically both going to just get Birkenstocks put on our feet right now.
Oh, yes. My hair will just grow, become a side braid, and then cut itself off. It's going to be amazing.
Buzz itself off in a dorm room bathroom.
Oh.
All right.
So should we get into it? Let's do it.
Should I go first?
Yeah, do it. Okay, go first.
So we're going to just talk about our sun, our rising, and our moons.
Mm.
So my sun is Libra. I was born on October 6th. And I feel like whenever I tell people I'm a Libra, they're always like, oh, of course you are. Of course you are.
I mean, like, I hate to do it, but like, of course, you are such a Libra.
Like. I really am. And like, in the positive and negative ways. Like, I am very indecisive. I'm very touchy-feely, I'm overly sentimental, I want to make everyone happy, it never works, I'm too messy, like, I'm very much a Libra in all those suns. Should I read the...
Yeah. So... Yeah, let's talk sun signs.
We're using CoStar Astrology.
Co-Star, it's free.
It's free.
Get the app.
On the iTunes store. So this is what it has to say about my sun being in Libra, and also just what suns are. So the sun determines your ego, identity, and role in life. It's the core of who you are, and it's the sign you're most likely to already know. Your sun is in Libra, meaning you are fundamentally oriented towards fairness and justice. Mm. Your always generous relativism allows you to see both sides of every situation, though this may sometimes come off as indecisive or insecure. You don't get tied down to a single view of things. You frequently question yourself and rethink your views. You're more impressionable than you appear. You do what you say and can get a lot done. Typically well-dressed. Okay.
That is the most organic, like, self shit. I love that.
Like, who? It's in your fifth house point, meaning you feel the need to distinguish yourself from others through romance, self-expression, creativity, and pleasure.
Wow.
AKA sad, lonely, horny.
Oh, no.
Interesting.
So, what I love and... how I know that Mia and I are also destined to be longtime lovers and podcast hosts is because we're both air signs. Our sun is both in an air sign.
Catch us floating.
Catch us floating. So my sun is in Aquarius. I was born in January. So I'm going to talk like this the whole time. Okay. My sun is in Aquarius, meaning that I am fundamentally unconventional and anti what?
Anti everything, just... bitch. You're anarchist.
Well, I like that. I'm punk. It says, comfortable dissenting or straying from the norm, your intellectual talent of abstraction is oriented towards pushing the boundaries of what seems reasonable. Oh, you carry a lot on your shoulders and have a need to fight for the underdog. It's in your fourth house, meaning that you feel the need to distinguish yourself from others through your home and family. That's actually very accurate.
Yeah, but quick read on both of us. Like, why do our astrological signs, like, read us as social justice warriors? Do you think that's because, like, our two signs are, and that's, like, trademark of air signs? Or do you think that's because the kinds of people who want to read about their sun signs are, like, also, like, people who are like, oh, I'm into justice and equality and the underdog?
You know what I think, though? So, like, Nancy is a Taurus, so don't worry. I will read my moon and my rising. I know you're all thinking an Aquarius and a Taurus, they're destined to break up. But don't worry. It's going to be fine.
It's been years.
It's been years. But see, like, Nancy is a Taurus, and she's, like, really – she's very grounded. She's an earth sign, but she's, like, very committed to justice and kind of, like – a preservation of doing the right thing, mm-hmm. as you probably could tell by last week's grievances episode.
Someone cutting in line. Unacceptable.
The worst. Whereas, like, both of us are, like, little floaty bitches, and so I feel like...
Right, ours is... That makes sense to me. Okay. That works for me. Also, another quick read of you, Maggie.
hey, really quick. I'm gonna roast your ass.
I just love saying punk with a hard K.
Punk. Do I do that?
You did it this time. You were saying it in a joking way, but... Okay.
Okay, but, like, what's your moon in?
So, here's the thing. What are the...
I know you're gonna try to disclaim this.
What are the three signs you hear people talk shit about the most? It's always Gemini, Scorpio, Taurus. Those are the three.
Yeah.
People are always shit-talking. Myself, motherfucking included.
Moon is in all three of those signs.
No. My moon... and my rising are Gemini.
Oh, you two-faced bitch.
I know. So here's what it says about my rising. Your ascendant is the mask you present to people.
Okay. Fake. Yeah. Okay, mine says that too, though, so.
It can be seen in your personal style and how you come off to people when you first meet. Some say it becomes less relevant as you get older. It changes every 2 hours. What?
No, like in birth times.
Oh.
Not like your rising is changing.
Yeah, I'm so if it doesn't make sense, text your mom to confirm your birth time. Your ascendant is in Gemini, meaning you come across as quick-witted, chatty, eclectic, and fun, though somewhat inconsistent. In conversation, you seem probing and curious.
Wow. Wait, what? First off, what time of the day were you born?
9:37 p.m.
Oh. I am always concerned with rising because I often feel like, I don't know, sometimes I feel like I am becoming my rising sign. Like, it's just like my fake-ass mask has become my life.
Turning into my fake mask.
But also, I like the idea that it might shake off a little bit as I get older.
What is it?
Okay, don't take this personally.
You're trying to disclaim it now.
My rising is in Libra. But my reasoning why I don't want to, like, shake it off. But.
Turn the computer off. It's done. No,
I'm sorry. Oh. I, like, my hand went to the record button. Like, oh, do we need to stop? Okay.
You are a Libra.
I am. My rising is in Libra because I come across as, like, very outgoing and, like, I want to be, engaging with people all the time. Like, it says, like... compromising, courteous, fair-minded. I'm none of those things really deep down. Inside, I'm cold and hard. No, but it's like you seem inclined towards balance in all forms, aesthetic, romantic, and judgment. That's really true, but I think a lot of that is an external-facing thing. Like, it's only insofar as I'm very aware of how it's perceived by others. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's,
well, yeah. I think that it being the mask you present to people doesn't mean that it's phony.
True.
Like, I really am probing and curious. But I think it's, like, it's part of how you present yourself to the world, which is nonetheless fake than
That's true.
Than anything else.
For me, my wild card is... Wait, so your moon is also in Gemini, right?
Yeah, so do you want me to read
one? Yeah, what does it mean?
So it says, the moon rules your emotions, moods, and feelings. This is likely the sign you most think of yourself as, since it reflects your personality when you're alone or deeply comfortable. Your moon is in Gemini, meaning your emotional self is often restless and unsettled.
Means your emotional self is a two-faced bitch. Yeah.
So when I'm most comfortable, I'm restless and unsettled? Fuck you! Your moon is in Gemini, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you're extremely adaptable, which Ooh. Sometimes makes you feel pulled in too many directions. You are easily bored and need to feel like you are free to be creative and create meaning, which can make you feel like you're in a constant identity crisis.
Oh, no.
It's in your first house, meaning you find security and safety through yourself and self-image. And because it's your first house, your moon in Gemini is hyper-present in your personality.
Oh.
I just got read to shit by this fucking website. Honestly, every time I, like, meet a girl and she's like, oh, can I look at your red shirt? Oh, what time are you born? I'm like, huh, gotta go. Really gotta run to the other side of the state. Why do you think I've gone to two different women's colleges? I'm just fleeing.
That's the opposite. That's literally, you went to two women's colleges, so you have inserted yourself into astrological hell. Nah. Like, that is...
Maggie, what's... going on with your moon sign?
My moon is actually my most boring part of myself.
Wow.
It is literally, it's like, oh, so like deep down to your core, you're boring as fuck. So my moon is in Leo.
What? Leos are not boring.
Okay, but read
They're
this.
They're like enigmatic and sexy.
What does enigmatic mean?
Like mysterious?
Oh, I'll fuck with that. Okay, but like this doesn't sound sexy. So it says, your moon is in Leo, meaning your emotional self is, oh, it's dramatic. Okay, I'll take that. Dramatic, proud, expressive, idealistic, and somewhat self-centered. Ooh.
Wow.
I mean, you're not wrong, but like.
Who isn't? When they're like alone, who's not self-centered?
Yeah. Also, who's not self-centered all the time? Some people are just better at hiding it. I said it.
Let's be real.
That might have been too hot of a take.
Nope, not really.
It says that I need a lot of love, care, and validation. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're a human being. That's what I'm getting from that.
It's in my 10th house, meaning that I find security and safety through career success and responsibility. And that is how Nancy and I get along. Fucking
wow,
Taurus.
Actually, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, we just got read to shit, and honestly, it's fine. If you have anything to say, you can stuff it.
You can keep it to yourself because my moon's in Leo. So.
If you understand anything about houses or what any of that bullshit means, send us a DM.
Yeah.
And let us know what your signs are.
If we have picked the wrong app and have completely misinterpreted what these mean, you can also feel free to just point us in the right direction.
This is like the astrology app that's like that restaurant where you can go or... the waitress is intentionally mean to you. This is like the app version of that.
Hey, you want to get fucked up? Read this. Okay, so it is...
almost 3 a.m.
No, bitch.
Feels like it. All right.
The month of homosexuality is upon us. And that means that we need to talk pride. It's time. And so we have a lot of different things we want to chat about. Want to talk about how we feel about pride this year in particular, politically, just partying wise, how we feel as queer women. But to get started, we wanted to do a little warm up. So Mia, I'll start with you. Just get us going.
Start
so,
with me, as opposed to
as dad.
Hello,
dad.
Hello.
So Mia,
yes.
What are your previous experiences with Pride? Like, how many have you been to? Have you marched? Where have you gone?
Well, my previous experiences with Pride include two very small Northampton Prides. One in which I made Maggie be a third wheel.
Oh, but it was so fun. We all made out. Yeah.
It was a little messy.
Was messy.
I believe there was some Mike's Heart involved. And that was my first year of college. And then I went post-grad. I went after I graduated. And those are the only two times that I've gone. I've never been to a big Pride, so I'm very excited to go to Boston Pride this year. I never marched.
Wow.
That's it, Maggie?
That's it.
What's your experience?
I never went in high school, but I went, I've been a bunch of times, though, later, and I marched in New York Pride in 2013 or 2014, I think. And honestly, once was enough. Also, like, 2013, 2014, like, things have already gotten, it's like TD Bank, Svedka, you know, it's just, like, it's just capitalist.
Love Svedka.
Pride. So, like, it was okay, but I marched with Mount Holyoke. There was, like, a Mount Holyoke contingent for the first time, which was really fun, and was definitely day drunk for that and, like, severely dehydrated, and it was, like, 90 degrees, and I was like, I love being gay. So fun.
Well, someone believes
that. And I went, every year I, like, am like, oh, man, maybe I'm not gonna go. Like, I don't want to go. And then I am like, oh, fuck, like, I'll fine. And Nancy and I go, and she's like, where's the sunscreen? And I'm like, oh, fucking Jesus. And then we day drink, and we get in a better mood, and it's all fine, you know, but like.
Yeah, I feel like I'm excited to go to Boston Pride, but I don't think I would go if I didn't live near you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would probably go as a single person or even with other friends. I think it's important to me that the people that I'm going with have, like, critiques of Pride, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm sure that we'll talk more about that and about, like, the nuances of how we feel about going to Pride despite having critiques or when we choose to tap in and tap out. And, I mean, I think it's like a lot of other queer spaces that we've talked about. But I think that I'm really excited because I feel comfortable and I feel like if anything's, like, ugh, or, like, kind of icky, like, there's people there who are going to be receptive to or probably already saying things about it, too.
Right.
Like, we're going to, like, talk about stuff that's happening.
Right. Too. And it's, like, and being with other people where, like, you know, you want to, like, you want to vote with your feet, you want to vote with your dollar. And so, like, for, you know, lack of a better idiom for that. So, like, being around other people who will also not go and spend money at places that are icky as shit, even though it's capitalism's already a key shit. But, like, and, you know, being in spaces where, like, if things are gross, like, you can leave or, like, you know, that's an important thing. I mean, like, how do you I'll say for myself, like, I have not – the year that I marched in Pride was not a year, to my knowledge, that there was a, like, any kind of Pride disruption in New York City. And I know there have been since then. And there was in Boston last year, too. I don't know. It was really – I felt really conflicted going to Pride at all because I definitely – I guess, like, I definitely agreed with, like, why people were protesting Pride and, like, why they were shutting it down. And so it felt really weird to be there and not participating in that direct action. Mm-hmm. But also, like, then that decision of, like, am I not going to go at all or am I going to go to some of it? I mean, it's – I don't know. Like, how do you feel about – like, if we're going to Pride this year, let's say we're just, like, standing on the side of the street watching, and there's, like, a direct action that's happening and it's being shut down for shit that we agree with, like, how would you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, I feel similar to you. I think that I would be like, yeah, I'm down with this being shut down. I mean, I think I also am like, well, it's also nice to have a space to just be around other gay people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like we talk about all the time, like, what are you willing to put up with?
Mm-hmm.
To see queerness represented or to be around, like, to be at gay clubs or to be or to watch certain films or TV shows or whatever. And I think it's another thing like that. Like, there's always a corruption of queer things in the world because, like, racism and sexism and homophobia are still going to exist in queer spaces.
Right.
Like, those systems reiterate themselves. So, like, you know, I think for me, part of wanting to go to Pride this year is about just wanting to see, like, oh, what's out there? Like, what is it like? I've never been to a Pride that's, like, big like that. I've never seen a Pride get disrupted, you know? Like, Northampton Pride is literally, like, just, like, a bunch of families.
Right.
There's no one has their pasties on.
Right.
You know? It's
right.
Like, people are selling cupcakes.
Right.
So I think that, like, I'm just as interested to see that kind of movement. And, like, and I think that's just as important. Because there's no one way to be queer. There's no one way to celebrate queerness.
And I think it's, you know, like, there are things. I think it's really interesting to see the juxtaposition in big city Pride. And that, to me, is what's so different than Northampton or other small town prides I've been to. Is that, like, Boston and big cities also have a push to be family friendly. Like, mainstream gay politics, like, it's a, like, adopting the phrase of kind of, like, keep it in the bedroom, like, this is about normalcy and heteronormativity. it worked. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I think I find it to be like an icky political device, and it made gay marriage happen. And it is like, it's, I feel like it is completely shaped like a huge proponent or proportion of like how the nation feels about gayness, queerness.
And it's, yeah, I actually, I don't know if I told you this, but as I was trying to find my wife at reunions in the 2008, I ended up becoming friends with a couple random 2008 alums. And I was talking to this one alum, and she was telling me that she met her wife after Mount Holyoke, but they both went there at different times. She was like, yeah, like, it's really, you know, and we were just talking about, like, how nice it is to have queer role models and blah, blah, blah. And she was like, yeah, well, you know, I remember when I first, like, started seeing, like, women who were married, and it was like, oh, I can be normal. Like, I can have a normal life.
Oh, my God.
And I was just sitting there like, I mean, that's great that you needed that and got that. And that's important to you. But I was like, that's not what I'm saying. You're totally, like...
Right.
And I don't want to, like, shit on you and your hopes and dreams, but, like, that's not what I aspire to. I don't... Because your normal is heteronormative.
Right.
Like, heteronormal is what you're saying, not just normal. You're talking about a picket fence.
Right. I feel like so much of my, like, personal politics are riding that really uncomfortable and, like, sometimes hypocritical, but sometimes well-thought-out space of being, like, I don't believe in marriage as a, like, heteronormative institution. I don't believe in what it represents. And, like, but at the same time, like, I'm going to get married. Right. And that's not really a question.
Right.
And it was, I mean, it was a question. Like, I definitely, like, I remember when I first came out, I was like, yeah, I'm never fucking getting married. Like, ha-ha! You know, like, but it's just, like, it's interesting to be in that space. And I feel like that is also kind of how I feel about, like about the protests and stuff. You know, like, when TD Bank comes by, when, like, all these places that have supported, like, the Dakota Access Pipeline, like, last year we didn't take any of their swag and we, like, turned around or, like, left and came back. And, like, and at times I'm like, oh, that's, like, for me, that's the way that I'm, like, relating to, that's kind of how my personal politics are playing into what I'm doing that day. But the other part of me is like, you hypocritical asshole, like, you're still in it. Like, you haven't taken yourself out from it. Like, that is still complicit.
Right.
There's something about it, which is like you're an active bystander. You're not a passive bystander. Right. Like,
right. You're going to be hooping and hollering.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And I, you know, I kind of have an inkling that I may go this year and be like, okay, well, that was interesting for a time.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have kind of an idea that I might, like, be like, oh, this feels a little weird, but that it does feel kind of important to have that experience so I can actually speak to it.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I've always felt around Pride, and I think I felt it for the first time in New York, was, like, I felt, it's like, to me, it's a very poignant marker of our age in relation to queer organizing and queer movements. And, like, it, I think it really shows how young we were that, like, our entire lives, mainstream gay organizing in, like, which has been trans exclusionary, it has been, like, very, very white centric. It is, like, you know, it has been heteronormative. But, like, that is the landscape that we grew up in. Like, Pride already was capitalized. Right. Pride already was normalized. Pride already was, like, this was
nothing new to our lives.
Right. But it's that feeling. I remember, like, walking past the Stonewall Inn and thinking to myself, like, I feel like the cognitive dissonance that you have to sit with to do that, it's, like, honestly, the more that we're talking about it, I'm like, why are we going to Pride? Like,
should we just not go?
Is this it?
Should we just march down the street? Let's just walk down Calm Ave with some rainbow shit on.
Where are you going to buy it, though? I thought about that this year.
I'll dye it myself.
With what?
My skin. My blood, sweat, and tears.
My blood, sweat, and tears.
Well, that's relating to, like, there's no ethical consumerism under capitalism. Yeah. That's just true.
Maybe we should pull back a little bit.
Yeah, there's no way to ever grasp to, like, get around that.
You probably thought you were gonna be listening to, like, a fun podcast about, like, fun gay shit, and we're like, okay, well, there's no ethical, like, god damn it.
Yeah.
But one thing I want to ask you about a little bit was how you're feeling about Pride in 45's America.
So Maggie wrote 45's America on our, like, little sheet of, like,
I don't want to write his name down.
Yeah, I mean, part of it makes me want to be loud and gay, and I think that Pride feels like an appropriate venue to do that because that's what I've seen. I want to perform extra gayness because I'm pissed. Not that Trump's gonna be watching me cab ride in Boston.
But like, what's, so what is the, I mean, I relate to it. I don't mean it as in like, what's the appeal of that? But like for you, what's the appeal? Like, where
do
you?
I think sometimes I get so angry. There's nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Like there's nowhere to go. Like the only thing I can do is just be like, you have to be a little bit resilient and a little bit like, I don't know, joyful out of spite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that can be its own thing, obviously.
You saying that has made me, I mean, I agree with you, and it's making me think of the Women's March, which I also did attend, kind of.
The first one?
The first one. The year and a half ago, whenever he was put into office or whatever the fuck. Whatever. But so I went to that in Boston, and I was skeptical about going. A bunch of friends and I talked about it, and we're like, I don't really think we're going to go. We don't know. And we decided to go. And I'm really glad that we did. Mm-hmm. But knowing what it was, like, it was exactly, like, all of the ideas that we had about being, like, it being a pink pussy hat nightmare were completely true.
Right.
And I am still glad I went, because there's a part of, maybe this is just the Libra rising in me. I really like to know, like, I want to fucking know what's going on, you know? Like, if there's, like, when there's...
That's how I feel, too.
Like, I will call this, like, personal political action, because actual political action is, like, not police guarded, so okay. but like in these moments where people are kind of displaying identity politics publicly, I like, these are huge moments, like, I do want to know what the fuck's going on. Mm-hmm. And I understand that not everyone, like, that in many ways is a privileged viewpoint to be able to say I feel comfortable doing that, and I can do that.
Right.
Because, you know, the thing I was thinking about 45's America is that, like, with the Women's March, it becomes a way for liberal people to kind of, like, ease some of their guilt, like, because I feel like it's a lot easier to say, like, love is love than it is to say, like, justice for Palestine or, like, open borders or anything else that, like, people are literally dying, and, like, it's so easy to be like, oh, but love is love,
right?
You know, or like,
disarm the police,
but like, or like, pussy grabs back, you know? It's like, right, like, I just, so it also, I don't like feeling complicit in other, in, like, white straight people feeling good about themselves.
Yeah.
Like.
Here's our money. And it's like, love is just such a boiled down version of the rage I feel as a young lesbian that I can't, like, wrap my mind around it.
Mm-hmm. We're all the same, yeah.
So, actually, quick thing I do want to say, actually, regarding Love is Love.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is an appropriate time to say that.
Yeah.
We want to do a Pride, I mean, a episode on gay marriage coming up this month.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's this month, yeah?
Yeah, it's the end of June. Yeah.
Later this month, we will be talking about gay marriage. But I do want to talk about Love is Love real quick. So, Maggie and I were talking about something once on text, and we were, like, arguing about something kind of, like, jokingly about the podcast. And I sent a Love is Love image to Maggie. And a young follower of ours was like, wait, I don't get it. Like, you know, didn't understand that we were making fun of Love is Love.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to address that because it felt like I really kind of couldn't over text in a way that would actually, like, encompass what we think about it. And so when we talk about criticizing phrases like love is love, we're criticizing the fact that it's a vague way to just kind of be complacent or pacify so much history and so much emotion and anger and protest that makes up fights for marriage equality, or, like, fights beyond that. The fact that gay marriage is not the ultimate goal for people in the world. That, like, it's about safety. It's about the intersection of a multiplicity of identities. It's about so much more than that.
Right. And housing. So, like, like, really basic
the
shit.
The right to not die in this
Street.
And so when we mock Love is Love, it's not that we're saying, like, we think that no one should want to get married. We think that it's stupid that people want to care about people's right to get married, or that, you know, that we don't think love is love. Like, we get that, and that's the point. But the critique that we have is that it's more than love. It's more than that. And there's so many other big issues that get thrown to the wayside by just pacing that friendly flowery band-aid over it.
And I think also, you know, two things from that. I mean, for starters, the idea of revolutionary politics being centered around love is that's stolen from blackness. I mean, that's stolen from like black organizing 100%. And so like, and it, and to see it so watered down in gay mainstream organizing,
it's unrecognizable.
It's, I mean, it's like, it is beyond. But the other thing is that I feel like also there's, I don't know. I'm really glad that you have like fleshed that out, because I think to me there's nothing more frustrating than like hearing something that like you kind of are like clinging on to. You're like, oh, that's an interesting like ideological point, but it's like no one ever really spells out why they're saying it. Mm-hmm. And so then it becomes a meme before you even know the, the history behind it. But it's like, but it's true. Like, what about like, because by the time we were going to Pride, by the time we were growing up, like the sexualization of gay people, like as much as that is a terrible stereotype that like, you know, gay men are just crazy promiscuous, like,
and as women are greedy,
it's also like this sanitized kind of like, it just doesn't work. Like, think of yourself at work and at school, like talking about your personal life becomes like divulging something sexual.
Yes, immediately.
Like, and it's like, well, talking about, but my personal life is sexual.
Right.
Like,
right. Like, have you ever had sex with a woman? Like, quick question. Okay. You'd be doing it all the time too.
That's really fun.
Yeah, that's a thing, and I think that's part of why I took longer to come out to some people rather than others, was feeling like I didn't want to have that kind of conversation revealing something about myself in a sexual way, because I felt like, I mean, first of all, I think nobody should really have to come out in general.
Right.
Ever. But I think that, so like, disregarding the fact that straight people don't necessarily have to come out, I think that there's something in particular about coming out as a lesbian that indicates, or coming out as a, as queer at all. I mean, I think the same thing applies for gay men or cross gender and sexual orientation spectrums. But I think there's something about coming out as not straight that tells someone about specific sexual acts that you do that is not thought about with straight people the same way. And that made me feel like icky and made me not want to talk about my sexual orientation, which is not necessary, which is sexual for me. But for some people, isn't. And sometimes it isn't for me.
Right.
You know, that I, like, was like, oh, but now you're going to, like, know this thing about me. And it's like, no, they're not seeing a sex tape of me just because I'm talking about how I, like, date women. Like, that's not the same thing.
Right. Right. Exactly. And I feel the same way that in many times it limits me from, or it makes me kind of want to be quieter about it because I'm like, wow, it, that's actually kind of an intimate thing I'm talking about. But at other moments, it turns me into this like raging 90s style, like, oh, fuck in the streets if I have to, you fuckers. Like,
yeah, it's also like this like punishment for being sexual.
Right. And it's like, that's not new.
Right.
Florals in spring, groundbreaking.
Right. It's like, this like, you know, I don't want to contribute to images of queer spaces being hypersexual, but at the same time, I don't want to stifle the fact that, like, being able to have sex the way that I want to is important to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
and like, one of the most well-known stereotypes about lesbians is that we don't have sex when we get old.
Right.
Is that, well, that women don't have sex when they get older anyways, but that lesbians, virgin, like, immediately stop having sex as soon as they partner up.
Yeah. What do you think we're doing in those U-Hauls?
That sounds those like are the sweatiest, darkest mess.
I got a hammock in there. It's a sex machine.
Just, can you imagine? Windowless, tiny unit, and you have a hammock in there, and you're like, ladies, no.
Yeah. I've got, like, string lights.
But so I feel like with, like, in the idea of, like, 45's America and what it means to go to Pride this year, I think this is so relevant. Like, you saw, did you see the, like, gay dance party outside of Mike Pence's house or something?
Yes.
You know, it's like, it was like, you know, and part of me is like, fuck yeah, you know, word, like, do your shit. But the other part of me is like, okay,
right.
You know, like, again, like, how much, like, are these people also participating in different actions? Like, what are they doing economically, professionally, like, with their communities? I don't know. It's not my fucking business. But, like, to me, Pride is, like, the culmination of that.
Right. Basics of this episode include, yes, Pride, fuck Pride.
Yeah. Really, though, yes, Pride, fuck Pride. Okay, two directions that I still feel like we need to enter.
I want to talk about partying.
Yeah. Yes! Amazing. Girl, let your hair down.
It's as down as it can be. Jimmy Neutron. Brainbuzz.
Partying? What do you...
Do you want to talk about partying?
What's yeah, let's just... Let's aggressively switch directions.
We're aggressively switching directions to drinking. And, well, not just drinking. People be taking poppers.
I know.
Hot take. I've actually decided to not drink for the month of June. Here's the reasons why. Totally unrelated to Pride. I just like feel like I was spending too much money every time I went out. I also feel like I was spending a lot of money on Ubers and Lyfts. And I was like, oh, I have a car. I could just drive my friends anytime we go out and just DD and like have the same amount of fun and like not have to, my friends or any of us have to pay. Not have to worry about
like
random people throwing up in the car with us.
I'm one of those friends.
Yeah. Although since I had that thought, my summer semester started and now I'm never going out for the foreseeable future. But anyways.
We're breaking up.
So I decided to stop drinking for a little bit just because I was like, oh, I'm like spending too much money. I don't really like drinking that much. Like I never really been that into partying. And I was telling Maggie about it and Maggie was like, oh, are you like, is this like related to Pride? And I was like, oh, I didn't think of that. But I mean, I haven't been drinking in the last like 2 weeks anyway, but coinciding with Pride, I think it is like an interesting thing. And it's going to be interesting to be in an environment that's so like revelry and celebration are so synonymous with get fucked up.
Yeah.
And I think it has a complicated and pretty fucking sad connection to queerness.
Yeah.
That like rates of alcoholism and substance abuse are a lot higher in queer communities, which is like, surprise, surprise, often because people are disenfranchised.
Yeah.
So I think that's complicated. My reasons for not drinking are not politically motivated, but I think it will be interesting to be in an environment where like, as someone who does typically drink and doesn't really have problems drinking and doesn't like feel weird about it, to be suddenly like, oh no, I'm not interested, and have people like kind of pushing me. Like I'm curious to see what the experience of peer pressure is gonna be like.
I think it makes me happy that like, you know, when we go to Pride this year, like we're going with like literal family, like queer fam. So like, you know, that element is less, but there is a certain amount of like, I don't know if it's because streets are closed off and there are no cars on it. I don't know what it is about it, or maybe it's just how many people are out, but there is something about Pride where strangers feel a lot closer to you than even in like, I know the idea that like, you know, you go into a queer space and there's a level of familiarity for better or for worse, which can be taken on. But at Pride, to me, it always has felt a little bit different anyways. And like that kind of peer pressure is more real, like, or just, I wouldn't even say peer pressure, more like, I don't know, just kind of like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But it's funny because for me, like, you know, I have divulged in fun party behaviors before, but I don't typically get super fucked up for Pride, especially, I mean, I don't really do that anymore at all, but like, particularly now, because like, I'm in a public space and like, not only am I in a public space, I'm in a public space, which is still majority straight people.
Right.
Like, if you're trying to tell me that, like, a major city Pride is not, like, cops, straight people, people active duty in the military.
And those gay dogs.
Like, and those gay dogs. Like, I'm just like, am I really trying to get, like, so smashed I can't walk? Also, hydrate. Hydrate means water. Like.
Right. It's the opposite action.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. I think it's complicated. I think it's also interesting, though. Is it Smirnoff's that I learned recently was like the first brand to ever.
Why is it always vodka?
I don't know.
I hate vodka.
There was like the first brand to do like specific like targeting to gay consumers.
I remember.
That and Subaru.
Speaking of Subaru and targeting gay consumers and just generally, I remember when did that Subaru commercial come out? Not the first one. Way back in the day, but there was one.
It was Absolute Vodka. Oh my God, so sorry. Oh. Have to correct the record. So sorry.
There was a Subaru commercial that came out pretty recently, but like we may have been pretty young. We may have been in like high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we were in high school when there was a Subaru commercial that was lesbian targeted, and I think by that I mean there was one lesbian couple featured in it in a show in a commercial featuring like several different families.
Right.
Anyway, I remember sitting with my mom and my mom being like, oh, like, look at this commercial. Like, I think I had come out. It was, like, probably senior year. I had told my mom that I wasn't straight. And we watched this commercial, and I said something like, oh, yeah, perfect. Like, gay people can be tools of capitalism, too. And I was, like, 18.
Okay, Mimi.
But I actually remember my gut reaction was being in... I mean, maybe I didn't even use those words. Mm-hmm. But I remember my gut reaction to the commercial was, like, why are you using this to just sell people things still?
I think that the Subaru history is really fascinating because it happened, I think it happened in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. I mean, Subaru was like one of the first to ever do that. And which is, I mean, the whole thing is super fascinating.
Which is interesting too, because Subarus last forever. So like.
Yeah. Also like it was in a time when like getting the gay dollar like wasn't all that lucrative. Yeah. Like it wasn't like, so, but I do know what you mean about feeling like the remembering like not having the language and frankly not knowing and like not critiquing capitalism and like not really understanding kind of how all these things went together. But and so in all of my little like not knowing shit but still feeling kind of like this just doesn't feel really good. Right. I remember feeling like I remember feeling like that was my first time like feeling like I wanted to gatekeep. Has been around pride, has been around like advertising and also around like straight allies. Sorry. Like, you know, it's been like back off, you know, like this is not, it's not a party for you to just do whatever you want.
That was an interesting thing about Northampton Pride is that there were a lot of like teens who were like not gay.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know I feel weird saying that, and the reason I, like, hesitate to say that is because, like, I don't fucking know. But, like, there seemed to be a lot of, like, young, straight, white teenagers from Northampton who are, like, grow up in such a proximity to queerness because they live in this, like, little gay bubble. I mean, mm-hmm. Northampton is the lesbian capital.
It literally has the highest concentration of lesbians in the United States.
Which is great.
also, but, kind of a nightmare at sometimes. Right, but
Rachel Maddow, looking at you. But yeah, so with these like young fucking like forest yuppie kids who have all these like weird names who like grew up with like, you know, their friend has two moms and like they're so proximal to queerness that they're like, Kate and I were calling them, like, it wasn't like first generation or second generation. We were calling them like born again allies or something.
Oh my god, yeah.
But we were just like making fun of the fact that like these kids were born into such proximity to queerness that pride is actually for them like more than it is. Like pride is like such a display for allies more than it even is for queer people.
Absolutely. And I think that actually, I think that this could be a good way to wrap this up is to talk a bit about what does it mean to go to pride, to celebrate pride, to be a queer person in an age where like there are a lot of people identifying in like very open ways, which is awesome. And then in other ways, there are a lot of people who are like, frankly, like not, like they're like not engaging in any like homosexual activity ever. And they're like not inserting themselves in queer spaces. And they're like in many ways, like living a very normative life, but are like kind of like you're talking about like a born again ally who are like, oh, it doesn't matter. Cause we're all fluid.
Yeah. Bitch, I am not post gay. And right. I
never want to be. And so it's like, how do you feel about going to Pride for that? You know?
Yeah. I do remember that feeling kind of icky at Northampton Pride when I went. But I think I'm a little bit, I mean, it was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Was the last time we went. I'm a little bit older now. But I think that I have kind of, it's taken me a while, but I think I've kind of come to a different place with my identifying as a queer person and my queerness. And I'm more comfortable with it. I'm more comfortable saying what I'm willing to put up with and what I'm not. And mm-hmm. And I'm more comfortable with, rather than trying to make a situation work for me, like moving to a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes a big difference.
So what is, like, how does that look?
So, like, instead of being at Pride and, like, being near, like, teenagers who are saying some stupid shit or, like, you know, being, like, proximal to people, like, being, standing next to a group of people who are, like, the way they're talking about Pride, the way that they're talking to each other is, like, not affirmative for me. I'll just be like, okay, I'm moving to a different part.
Yeah.
I'm moving away from this. You can be here. You have every right to be here. We're on a fucking street.
Right.
But I'm not going to be around you because the kind of scene that I'm looking for, I know what I want and I know what I don't want now. Mm-hmm. That being said, it's still icky.
That's such a mature way to think about that. Like, I feel like I allow it to get to me so aggressively as opposed to just, like, being, like, I can't control what other people are going to do and I can, like, control my own choices, so I should do that actively. But, like...
Well, it's hard, too, because a lot of times I feel like the people who are saying that kind of stuff, they're often younger. And so there's this frustration on my part, and I can only imagine the frustration on queer people who are much older, like, decades older than us.
Yes.
Like, I want to be like, fuck you. You don't know how hard it was to get this. I don't mm-hmm. even know how hard it was to right. be able to say that, like, to use the labels that people use and to be able to say them out loud and choose them.
Right.
Like, no, I don't want to be past that. So, right. And if I feel that upset about that, I can only imagine how people who actually lived through it.
Right. For me, it is when you get that influx of, like, it's Pride and there's, like, 600 people posting all over their fucking Instagram and it's all over your face and it's like everyone's talking about it and asking if you're going, or like, it's very hard to separate those are the moments where I find I have the hardest time. I get the most resentful about being like, well, fuck you, you know, like they're all having a great goddamn time. And then I do it too. I can totally contribute to it because I post a photo of me and my buds and I'm like, huh, gay, you know, like, okay. Like,
yeah.
Okay, so for the end of this episode, to really go out with a big Pride bang, we're not going out, honestly. We got 3 more Pride episodes in this month.
Yeah.
Settle the fuck in, yep. Buckle your seatbelts. But so we wanted to inspire you a little bit with our Pride anthems, what we think about when we think of ourselves starring in the 1990s classic Queer as Folk on top of a Pride float with our flowing short crew cuts. We wanted to do this by way of dramatic reading, also because we can't get the copyright to the song, so we're not going to play them on here. But Mia is going to really break out her poetry skills and read the lyrics aloud.
Yeah, so we definitely couldn't afford the copyright on either of these songs. My Pride song is For Once in My Life by Stevie Wonder. If you didn't get it yet through this episode, I am sentimental and sappy. Here we go. For once in my life, I have someone who needs me. Someone I've needed so long. For once, unafraid, I can go where life leads me. Somehow I know I'll be strong. For once, I can touch what my heart used to dream of long before I knew, oh, someone warm like you would make my dream come true. Yeah, yeah. For once in my life. For once in my life, I won't let sorrow hurt me. Not like it's hurt me before. Not like it's hurt before. For once I can say, this is mine, you can't take it. As long as I know I have love, I can make it. For once in my life, I have someone who needs me.
Someone who needs me. Wow.
Yeah. The song just repeats after that, so...
Yeah, but the rhyming is delicious.
It's really an amazing song.
It feels... Do you ever, like, read song lyrics out loud and you're like, it feel like this is beautiful and eloquent, but also the rhyming is third grade, so... That's
every Devendra Banhart song ever. Devendra Banhart's Spanish songs, too, if you, like, someone who speaks Spanish reads them, they're like, my sister-in-law is fluent in Spanish, and she's like... This is, like, elementary poetry. It's, like, so corny. It's, like, the boy loved the girl and the ocean. And you're, like, moving on. Oh, so I will say, though.
Yes.
If you do listen to that song and think about love and queer love, you will feel tearful and sappy and warm and sweet. And I just love it. Okay. So Maggie's Pride song is Believe by Cher.
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
It's a banger. That song slaps.
Intro. After love. After love. No matter how hard I try, you keep pushing me aside. And I can't break through. There's no talking to you. So sad that you're leaving. It takes time to believe it. But after all is said and done, you're going to be the lonely one.
Whoa.
Oh. Do you believe in life after love? I can feel something inside me say... I really don't think you're strong enough. No. Do you believe in life after love? What am I supposed to do? Sit around and wait for you? And I can't do that. There's no turning back. I need time to move on. I need love to feel strong. Because I've had time to think it through. And maybe I'm too good for you.
Oh.
Repeats.
Wow.
Blah, blah, blah. Oh, and then she says, but I know that I'll get through this. Because I know that I am strong. I don't need you anymore. Oh, I don't need you anymore. I don't need you anymore. No, I don't need you anymore. Do you believe in life after love?
No, I don't need you anymore. I really thought we established this.
Will you tell us why you love this song and why it's your pride song?
Honestly, I love this song because I am not a huge Cher fan. And I like, it is really my one Cher song. So there's something special about that. No, but really, I think the reason why I like this song is because it, like, there are these songs that are, like, constantly played in cliche gay moments, like, in movies and clubs, and this is one of those songs, and It's Not Right, But It's Okay, that Thunderpuss remix.
An amazing song.
That's a gay-ass song. You know, there's, like, a couple of those that are, like, so gay. And this is, to me, like, I feel nostalgic for something I never experienced. So... Yes. Hooray! You made it through a whole Pride episode. Congratulations.
One of many.
So thank you guys for listening. Really, we appreciate you tuning in. And for any of our straight listeners, we're so happy that you decided to join us. And in honor of Pride Month, all episodes now through the end of June, you do owe us subscription dues just for the month in the form of compliments. And in terms of concrete subscription dues, that would be bags of spicy sweet chili Doritos. So pay up. And otherwise, we will see you guys next week. We are going to be talking about self-care and self-care during Pride Month.
Yay!
Very good.
Send us your thoughts. Send us your ideas. What do you do for self-care?
Yeah, what do you do for self-care?
We'll be poking and prodding throughout the week, so catch us on social media.
Yes, and stay hydrated. It's really warm out there.
Bye.
That's it.